All right. Welcome to Enlighten Radio. We're broadcasting on www.enlightenradio.org. And if you're on a cell phone, that's really shows you the blog. If you want to listen to the program on a cell phone, you have to go to player.enlightenradio.org. And there's also a catalog of almost all the podcasts on podcasts.enlightenradio.org as well. This show is normally we broadcast live at 7 a.m. in the morning, but in this case, we're taping it later in the day. And I had to do that several times. Not everybody wants to get up, especially the geezer crowd that I know and doesn't all want to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, I want to welcome our host, which is James Boyd, okay, for this Recovery
Good morning,
Radio show. Normally on Thursday mornings at 7. But also my good friend Garrett Moran, who met through the Quakers and through at many other occasions since. And I invited him to the program because he, on the subject of recovery and addiction, you know, he has quite a bit of experience in both mental health services in West Virginia and in more recently in this particular question. And so I'm glad to welcome him to the program as well. So, James.
Yes, sir.
Take it away.
Good morning to you. Yeah. All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show this morning. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover, and we're going to try to do it in the way that everybody can, you know, just understand what we're talking about here this morning. John, did we give a topic to the show this morning? I want to give everybody something to chew on. Okay, we're going to come up.
You can come up with a topic. Yeah.
We'll come up with something after that. My name is James, and I'm co-host, and my background is in substance use disorder, both on and off the field. I'll put it like that. I'm trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive, and I have an extensive, an extensive amount of information inside my head from personal experiences and from what I've learned in this arena on both sides of the aisle, in the prison system and within the community. And I'm so happy to have Mr. Moran on the show this morning. I have not personally met him, but anybody who is trying to help cultivate the community to move it in a better direction is welcome on my team. So welcome, sir. Good morning to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, James.
Why don't you give us some background on yourself there, Garrett, and take your own path on this subject for a moment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I started working in behavioral health, which is the umbrella term for mental health and substance use in West Virginia a little more than 50 years ago. I am retired mostly at this point. I retired from a position as professor of public health at WVU, and also had the title of associate director for services and policy innovation at the Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute at WVU. But my job while I was there was really just to work on addressing the addiction epidemic. I didn't really teach. I just worked with state officials and people around the state on how we could do a better job of addressing the substance use crisis in West Virginia. And as you well know, West Virginia still has the highest death rate in the nation from addictive disorders, most of it from opioids, but the synthetic fentanyl has been a huge killer. And now we've also got, it's no longer just opioids, it's now opioids and stimulants like methamphetamine and to some extent cocaine. And then xylazine which causes these terrible sores on people and is being cut into the drug supply. So it's a really serious problem. We have made, since I started working on this area intensively, I guess 5 years ago. We've made significant progress in building up a treatment system, in that 5 years ago, we had like 150 residential treatment beds in the state, and that's about 10 times that many now. So there's probably more than enough residential treatment beds. What there isn't is adequate community supports for after people leave the residential settings. And also, we've not yet done a very good job of adapting to the change in the nature of the addiction crisis. We don't have very effective means for treating the stimulant use disorder. We know how to do it. It's not a pill. It's not a medicine like it is for the opioids, but we have some good approaches that work well to treat stimulant use disorder, but they're not being widely implemented in the state. Mm-hmm. We're still sort of stuck with the focus on opioids alone. I serve on the Governor's Advisory Council on Substance Use Prevention and Treatment, and specifically on the treatment subcommittee. So treatment is, I think, prevention and treatment are certainly at least equally important, but my personal focus has been on treatment. Mm-hmm. And that's where I put most of my time and energy. Are you all familiar with the Hope in Action Alliance?
Hope in Action Alliance. I've heard of that. But tell me exactly what it is, so I'll let you know if I'm familiar, because there's so much out there.
Go ahead. It's a volunteer group in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. It was developed originally by Bob Hansen, who served as the director of the Office of Drug Control Policy, and previously, and by Dr. Kathy Slimp, who was the state public health officer a few years ago. And they said, we really need to get people outside of government involved in addressing this. It's open to anybody who's interested. They meet on a regular basis, and actually the reason I ask you to postpone this is because I was at a meeting of the policy committee of the Hope in Action Alliance earlier this morning, and we had several people from Eastern Panhandle. You probably know Angie Gray.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You. Angie was on this this call earlier, and Dr. Slimp, and a number of like 15 people just on the policy committee. But this is a group that I would really encourage you to and anyone who's interested in this topic to get involved in. This is a group that is aimed at advocacy, and we want to try to work with the legislators. Mm-hmm. Of course, to be frank, I think the major goal with legislators in recent years is to avoid them doing more damage.
Yeah, sure.
Because they keep. I'm a big advocate for harm reduction, and
I work with Dr. Dave Ditton.
Yep.
I worked with him a lot. So I think coalition building is the way to go.
Yes, that's
and
exactly
I,
right.
I think coalition building is the way to go. I think the getting rid of all the antiquated systems, all the antiquated ideology. We just got to clean out the attic of all of the antiquated, because I think the policymakers are becoming sort of an antagonist to the recovery process. Sustainable recovery.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Garrett.
I'm with you completely.
I had a technical question, Garrett, because I was just telling right before we started recording, Garrett, how my wife Carol, who she was able to quit smoking completely. I mean, she's been struggling with it for years, but because of a new drug that acts as a blocker to the nicotine addiction. Mm-hmm. But does not seem to have the same side effect as the Suboxone, for example, which is a blocker on heroin, right? but also you remain addicted to the Suboxone. I mean, you can never get off of it, or very, very difficult. But this blocker on nicotine had almost no side effects at all. And my question is there a way to get to, in the medically treatment, I don't know what the latest research or efforts are. I mean, I'm not even sure if the drug companies are trying to find a cure in this direction. Mm-hmm. But is there a way of improving the medically assisted drugs so that you don't have this quite the same? So you could get to the same place Carol got, which, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to tell you, I've been smoking for 30 years. There's not very many people. I quit after 20, okay? It took me 9 times, all right?
Yeah, I quit after 30, and it took me 100 times. I've had an addiction to tobacco, and tobacco is a very addictive substance. And I'm not sure which medication you're talking about, John, but in terms of the opioids, I think we have 3 good medications, methadone and buprenorphine I'm not a big fan of the third one, and so I always forget it.
Suboxone,
Naltrexone.
Naltrexone, that's what it's called now. Okay.
And the injectable form of that is Vivitrol. So, so the Vivitrol does not involve continued use of an opioid. However, it also doesn't work as well as the ones that do. And I've talked to numerous doctors who tell me that treating people with opioid use disorder is one of the most rewarding things they do, because, you see somebody change. You see somebody in a relatively short period of time turn around and get to the point they can reengage with work and community and family.
Clarity.
Yeah, yeah. And you can do that on buprenorphine or methadone. I'm not too worried. If people can get on those and stay on those, that's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. If they get them off eventually, that's great too, but it's more important that they stay functioning and engaged with their lives and their families and their communities than it is that they be completely free of any substance.
I think for the community, the public, mm-hmm. They, when you say those names, Suboxone, they forget about the beginning of that. Medically assisted, you have to be medically assisted to get on it, medically assisted to get off of it.
Mm-hmm.
You take your prescriptions and you follow the doctors, and so then the recovery coaches, I was talking to John, how the dynamic works when people's lives change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a dynamic that's involved. And when you can get someone's attention long enough, when they can get their own attention, the clarity, when the parasympathetic nervous system, when everything is online, when everything mm-hmm. is doing what it's supposed to do, that's when the professionals, like people who are peers, the peer support person who is very, very adept at his job, at their experiences, and when you can get a person's attention after they get that clarity. After they get that clarity and the professional can see the clarity by communicating with them,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
the transformation takes place.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. Now, Dr. Aldous told me something a long time ago that he encourages mm-hmm. me so much. He said, because I used to say, well, I was on heroin and I stopped and I did this and I wasn't on methadone and this is what happened. But he said, James, you're the exception to the rule. It's not usually the rule, because I got into recovery early. And so now I've been free from heroin addiction for a little over 10,000 days now. But, you know, I did it one day at a time.
Yeah.
Well, I use that language.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said to me, he said, you're the exception to the rule. He said that things have really changed with the chemical dependency and all of the things that happen to your body and your mm-hmm. mind. And now we're finding out how to change that. We're finding out how to change it. And medically assisted treatment is one of the best things that has happened, yeah. you know, that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I started using heroin like when I was 14 years old. Wow. And yeah. And so that's what I bring to the table, that mm-hmm. experience, that mm-hmm. experience with that. I'm 72 now.
That's a good age.
Yeah, very good age. Yeah. And all of the dynamics that go with this. So yeah, this is a really good show for me.
Yeah.
I appreciate
yeah.
it.
And the fentanyl is even worse. More, you know, we're getting these terrible stories of, you know, kids who are taking these pills at a party, and one pill and they're dead. I mean, it really
wow.
is just astounding.
It hijacked.
Yeah. yeah. Wow. But with the methamphetamine is really a big contributor to the deaths too. And we don't have a medication to treat that. So a lot of the programs around West Virginia are still just sort of ignoring it, or they're kicking people out because they're not treating the methamphetamine issues and they're kicking people out, or they're kicking people out because they drink alcohol, which we can treat, you know. It's really some of the treatment program policies in this state and in this region are really backward and need to be improved. We've made progress over the past several years, but there's a long way to go. And another good thing we've done is we've got emergency departments across pretty much all across the state now to pay attention to whether somebody used to be, you'd overdose, you'd go to the ED, they'd get you detoxed briefly and send you back out, and at which point you'd shoot up again. And we've made real progress. And you mentioned peers, James. The role of peers, people who are themselves in recovery, like you are, and who working with others just makes all the difference in the world. To have somebody who's been there, done that, knows what it's like, who can come along and recognize your situation and speak firsthand about what it took to make that transformation.
Mm.
And so we've got peers connected to emergency departments across the state.
One quick of the response, teams, quick response team,
quick response teams that
yeah, I was one of the yeah
mm-hmm. that reach out. And the other place where we have made some progress is, you know, the single most deadly time for a person with an opioid addiction is if they've been in jail or prison, and we're still putting far too many of them in jails and prisons. But then they come out, and the death rate within the first week to 30 days is just astronomical. And we finally, after years of bureaucratic foot dragging, finally begun to make some progress in getting people into treatment while they're in jails in West Virginia, and managing the transitions better. Now we got a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm currently working with a group up in New Jersey. We're taking care. We're getting fines and fees,
mm-hmm.
and we have a form that when a person is processed into the system, they receive this form so that the social work community can start to work on
mm-hmm.
Their exit plan in terms of other courts. We had a guy that was in jail for 5 years, and he had a warrant for his arrest, and he couldn't come to court. And where he was in jail, they didn't care about him getting to court. So when he was getting ready to be released, he was rearrested.
Yeah.
Now, so West Virginia is my point. I'm also working with a group up here. We go to Rahway State Prison a lot. I've been to Trenton. We call it meet them at the gate. And mm-hmm, so after these mm-hmm. people come out of jail, they come out, and especially in Martinsburg, I see them walking up the street with a paper bag or nothing. So, or either they get out of that, you know, just a little short 35, 45 days in there after they go to court. Somebody needs to be there. Churches with a bag, a bus, something. Somebody needs to be there at that gate. And so we call it meet them at the gate. I would love to collaborate with you more on that, because if you get something going down there, John says, with me, I'll figure out a way to show up. Because this is so important to me. And I know most everybody who's doing this kind of work in that area, in the Eastern Panhandle and beyond. I've driven all up and down the highway to all of the sober houses, and you know, you get. I worked with Judge Faircloth very, very closely with her as a recovery coach. So please, Mr. Ryan, if you get something going, count Recovery Radio on board. We on board.
Great. That's wonderful.
A question I had. What kind of legislative or state effort, if it were made, how much change could it make? In other words, everyone has potential remedies and solutions and scenarios, like the presence of peer coaches or the availability. I don't know how expensive some of the drug remedies are for people that may or may not be fully covered. But in any event, you know, if the state was serious about and say, oh, if we did A, B, C, D, E, we could cut the number of deaths in half, or we could do something worth reporting. What comes to mind when?
Well, I mean, one of the major killers in West Virginia, in my personal opinion, is the state legislature, and they have taken action to really crack down on harm reduction programs, syringe exchanges, and you know that people, you can see how the simple-minded thinking goes. Why you're giving people these needles, you're just enabling them to continue. What you're doing is you're making a contact with somebody who can connect them to treatment, who can show them there's a way to begin the process of changing the way they're living, and you're saving them from infection, from hepatitis C, from HIV, and it's a first step, a connection that you then build into the recovery and the transformation that we've talked about. And our state legislature has made that far more difficult. They've turned it into a political issue in which the simple-minded thinking is prevailing.
Yeah. And but the state has to have some cooperation from the city officials, right?
Well, that's what they said, that
if you got city officials who own or who are connected seriously to rehab centers and detoxes, and they have a stake in it, you know, why would they help us to help people? People become commodities when they are addicted to substance. So you're someone's commodity, like it or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so the answer to your question, John, I do think that it would make a difference, but there's steps that we have to do. We got to remove some of the bad players. And if you can't do it on a state level, let's look at them little rats down there nibbling away in the city.
Look at each community.
Yeah, just look in the communities and dig in and go up under the carpet. Yeah.
Some friends of mine who've done amazing work in Clarksburg over the past year or so.
They've been there.
They've pulled together all the people who are in any way related to this issue, most of whom didn't even know each other, didn't work together, and they've built a community coalition. And as you said earlier, James, that's a really a key part of what we have to do. I had proposed that we implement a program like the one they have in Pennsylvania, which is really designed to build community coalitions, and they're using Medicaid funding. I don't want to get into the details of how it works, but it's a program that really helps programs to focus on the real needs, the whole person needs. of a person with addictive disorder, and begin to address them, and to connect all the resources in the community that are needed to address them. Building community coalitions and changing the way we support these things, integrating substance use and mental health treatment into healthcare generally is a really important direction to go. And then working on the continuity. In our group meeting of the Hope and Action Alliance earlier today, we had the leader of the state recovery residence program speaking, and they're doing really good things to make the recovery residences improve the quality of their services. And there were some that were sort of shaky outfits, and they're trying to weed them out and make sure that the recovery residences are available. And as we were talking about that transition from residential to community setting, recovery residences are a key part of that. That's another area where we have made real progress in West Virginia. Long way to go, but it's getting much better.
I worked with Dr. Hardian over at Mountaineer Recovery when they were first putting that building together over
In Morgantown?
No, in Martinsburg. Dr. Hardian.
Yeah.
You're in Eastern Panhandle, right? You're in Martinsburg?
Yeah. Okay. Shepherdstown.
Okay, Shepherdstown. I worked with so I worked with Dr. Machunas, Christina Machunas. Yep. I talked to her just the other day. All right. And I worked, closely, like I said, with Dr. Dave Ditton, and worked with Senate. Work with John Unger and Marty.
Yeah,
I was one of their first recovery coach students. I think that we got a long, long way to go, but at least we know we can see.
Yeah,
I mean, I can see that recovery works when the right kind. And Dr. Aldous said to me, he said Suboxone is not the treatment. It's not the treat. I mean, it's not the. How did he put that? He said, Suboxone medically assisted treatment is not treatment. It's not the treatment. It's just a medication. The treatment has to be something else. And Dr. Machunas and I, we were, on the holistic side.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you familiar with Full Circle? Full Circle Healing Center?
No, not the name. But certainly the concept of holistic
Charlestown. Yeah, holistics
Let me ask a chicken and egg question. So, is how much of a driver of addiction is poverty or vice versa?
Huge.
And so that if you abandoned all your efforts to about medically assisted, and you were to raise the abolish the poverty level in West Virginia, I'm just giving this as a hypothetical example.
Yes.
Would that also have an effect?
Yeah. I mean, John, you and I are both radicals. But what we've had in this country is many decades now of efforts to make the 1% infinitely richer and the rest of us poorer. And the people who get into addictive disorders are the ones with diminished expectations. People, they saw how their parents lived. They thought they were going to live like that or better. And instead, the jobs are gone. There's no support. There's no employment. And and if you look at where the worst addictive disorders are, they're in West Virginia and Appalachian, Pennsylvania, and Appalachian, Ohio, Appalachian, Kentucky, where the mining and the manufacturing has gone, disappeared or gone overseas. And that's where you get the addictive disorders. So one of the best things we could do, it'd be to raise the minimum wage. That would probably, we'll never treat our way out of this. We need to move toward prevention and improving people's living standards and their communities is the best strategy in the world for that. Mm-hmm.
Best strategy. It worked for me. It worked on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, brothers and sisters, we're at the 30-minute mark, and my experience is people don't listen to podcasts much over 30 minutes. So I'm going to suggest that we...
We're going to run that. We
got a lot of information here.
Go ahead, James. You run the commercial you got from Tide?
No, I'm not going to run a commercial. www.enlightenedradio.org, that's the only commercial I got. But I usually get the podcast up in a day or so, but this week I'm a little behind. But anyway, I think it's a lot of great information, and it's a great discussion that we ought to try and promote. I know recently, Karen Valentine and I have been interviewing mostly Shepherdstown people, actually, on this sort of theme called Spirits of Shepherdstown, I think. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of working. We've had, like three or four really, really good discussions, and similar to this one, a little bit different themes each time. But it'd be nice if we could get revive, for example, the role that the churches, at least the ones that have a community interest, could play in trying to involve more young people. I mean, for years, I used to talk to Jim Oxer, and we used to work out of the gym together Shepherd's Wellness Center. And he used to say that almost so many positions in Shepherdstown, and not just Shepherdstown, other towns, were staffed by volunteers from mostly the faith communities, okay, who played a role in the park department or culture or whatever, and that with the loss of participation in the area churches, the decline in membership, then that level of participation and community service was affected in a number of different communities as well, including Shepherdstown. And I understand that recently with Shepherdstown Shares, for example, that there's some of that's being reborn. I think it's largely being inspired by GT, that's what I'm told, which doesn't surprise me. He's a very community-minded guy. I think it's wonderful to keep this kind of discussion going if we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Where are you? Are you in town here, Garrett, now, or are you tending your boat, or what are you doing?
I'm in town, and we're actually headed up to Caroline's mother's in Ohio later today.
So right. All right. Well, good luck to you guys.
Back and forth a lot there.
All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening in. And take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.
All right.
Great. Take care. Okay. Thank you.